Blog Talk Radio.
And I got the HD blues, and my life feels kind of rough. Baby, I won't ever, ever give up. You might see me moving.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Live. Help for HD Live is brought to you by Help for HD International and is made possible by our sponsors, Teva Pharmaceuticals and the Griffin Foundation. Today we have Dr. LaVonne Goodman on to talk about her experience using Austedo. She actually, we haven't had her on for a while, so we're excited to have her back to talk about her newest article on HD DrugWorks. If you haven't visited the site, you need to check it out. She is the articles, she writes them for us to understand as a community, which is great. It's www.hddrugworks.org, and I will give you that as we go on as well, again, for everybody, and it's on the show page. So let's just jump right into the show. Hi, LaVonne. Thank you for coming back on the show with us.
Oh, thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, let's just start by talking about what Austedo is and a little bit about the history of it.
Austedo is a drug that is based on the old tetrabenazine drug that's been around for decades, actually, and has been our only FDA-approved drug for Huntington's. Deutetrabenazine is a variant on that that has terium in two places where hydrogen atoms are, and you don't need to know the chemistry. What it does is it makes it harder for the body to catabolize it or break it into its components that then are excreted. So it hangs around longer because you can't get rid of it quite as fast. And it doesn't... you don't need as high a dosage then to get to achieve a therapeutic level. It is thought to have fewer side effects because you don't have to have a big peak dosage. So its advantage is that you don't have roller coaster effect of effective drug being too high and then too low. It stays smooth, and avoiding the very high dose is probably why deutetrabenazine has fewer side effects than the old tetrabenazine. You never get that high of a dose where you are more likely to see side effects.
Yeah, and I think that's really important because I think when when Austedo was coming around and Auspex was looking at it, we heard a lot of people saying, well, it's just another tetrabenazine. It's just another xenazine. So I don't think that we truly don't understand until now that we have it, that it's actually different. And it is important to understand the difference between the two because it's not just another xenazine.
Yes, that's correct. There are... And it's very important to get across to people, individuals and families who have Huntington's disease, also to get across to our MD community, our professional community, to be aware that this is a drug that is better in terms of fewer side effects. Its benefit in terms of chorea control is the same. So in that sense, it's the same old drug, but the beauty is that it does not have the side effects of the old tetrabenazine, as many side effects as the old tetrabenazine. And that's very important to people with HD and families, because a lot of the symptoms, side effects, coincide with symptoms or complications of HD itself. Very hard, maybe nigh to impossible for a doctor or families to know whether it's HD progression or whether it's a side effect of the drug. Mm-hmm. So it becomes very hard to assess those two things, one from the other.
Yeah, that's definitely in the fatigue, I think, is my husband suffered mostly with fatigue on Xenazine, severe fatigue. And I thought you totally just made a light bulb go off, because I always just thought, is he tired because of the drug, or it's just HD? We hear that they're tired. So, yeah, that does make sense.
The only way to tell is to decrease or stop the drug. I think.
Yeah. And so is there any other improvements besides chorea? So it's focused just on chorea. But I kind of heard through the grapevine there was like some people actually thought their quality of life felt better. Is that something that
right?
Is true?
The chorea score was what the FDA based their drug approval on. And a drug company has to find some objective measure, something you can actually measure for FDA approval. So that is what they got the drug approved for, because it improved the chorea score.
Right.
I think the important thing, the more exciting thing about this clinical trial is that they also put in measures of quality of life or function, improved function, or change in how the person in the trial felt at the beginning of the trial and then at the end of the trial when they had been on drug for 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about in the article something called treatment success, and we think of treatment success, medical treatment success, as, you know, when you can ask a person, do you feel better? And they say yes. And that is treatment success. Now, that's not very objective, you know, but, you know, it's hard to measure, but isn't that the most important thing? You know, you feel better. You feel better about your disease. They used a scale in the trial where they asked the person at the beginning of the trial, both those on placebo and on the drug. They asked at the end of the trial, how do you feel now as opposed to when you began the trial? And there were seven different things that they could choose. And the doctors who were coordinators also had a similar thing that they did. And of course, people and the coordinators at the clinical trial sites didn't know who was on drug and who was on placebo. So everyone had to choose an answer between very much improved, improved, no change, and then negatively, three different levels too. So there were seven different points on the scale they could choose. People, individuals on the drug, more of them chose the very much improved and much improved than did the placebo group. Now, some in the placebo group did too. You know, we have big placebo effects in our clinical trials, and we, of course, want a drug that's better than placebo if we're going to be using it long term. But there was an improvement in how people felt at the end of the trial as opposed to the beginning of the trial, more so in those who received the drug than in placebo. And that's treatment success.
Yeah. And so now that it's out of trial and it's available for the Huntington's community, I don't know, but I'm assuming you, by your article, that you've been prescribing it to families in your clinic. So are right. what are families saying?
Well, not no, you were not prescribing it for every person in the clinic. Those with who don't have chorea, juveniles, or have very small amounts of chorea, or those who are in very late disease and are more don't have as much chorea and their movements have changed to a more rigid sort of dystonic movement, then this drug won't help those individuals. So not everybody is a candidate. I think in my practice, there are more people who are a candidate for the do tetrabenazine or the Austedo as opposed to the old tetrabenazine. I waited in the past to use tetrabenazine, the old drug, until, you know, chorea was fairly severe because tetrabenazine, I was concerned about side effects, more concerned about side effects with the old drug than with the new drug. So there was always the balance of not wanting to do harm, benefit versus harm is always something that we have to balance. So the balance is presently, I believe, and should be, that this drug is used earlier because of fewer side effects. You have the benefit without many side effects. So you have a drug that treats chorea that doesn't give you very many side effects. So if we can benefit, it's a matter of chorea points, but it's what chorea, what those movements, how they impact people's lives and families' lives with Huntington's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the things that I'm not chuckling, I'm just happy about it, is that I had not anticipated some of the changes that I saw, beneficial changes that I saw in some of my patients who I prescribed this drug for. I followed them up often by phone to see how they were doing. And what impressed me initially is that I was wondering with one of the patients if I had the right person on the phone because the speech was much better than it had been previously. He could articulate words better than before. And if you read my article, there was another one of the stories that I put in is I have individuals who a sister reported to me of one of my patients that when she wanted to thank me for prescribing this drug because now she had her sister back, that she could now talk to her on the phone and understand her.
Sure.
Now, that may be, those are big things in the lives
They're
of people
huge
with Huntington's.
Things.
They are
oh, yeah.
huge things.
Yeah.
It's not going to cure the disease. You know, it's not going to take other problems associated with Huntington's away. But those things that we can help, those symptoms that we can help or that can be helped by drugs, then utilizing those drugs, I think, is very important. You know, not to overemphasize its benefit. You know, not everybody benefits. Not everyone
sure.
is a candidate for the drug. So, but those people who are candidates, I think, deserve a try on this drug. You know, in the clinical
yeah.
trial, not everybody on the drug benefited. There was a small number of people who did not. I was asked once, I've been asked when I've given this presentation to people, well, why is it that some people respond and some people don't? And I said, wow, what a great question. I have no idea was my answer. And I'm not sure, you know, we can predict or know why one person who looks like they're at the same stage of disease and chorea looks the same, why one person is benefited and why one person is not. we don't have that. We don't know enough about the disease, I think, to be able to answer that question.
Right.
And, you know, and the one thing I think that people don't, you know, the one thing that I noticed that with all drugs, though, right, like with even some of the, you know, we talk as a community about some of the antipsychotics. Some work for some and some don't for others, you know. That's pretty typical. Don't, I mean, you're the doctor, not, I'm not, but don't you find that kind of typical?
That's not just, yes, that's not just for Huntington's. It's also for when we use, when those drugs are used in schizophrenia or other conditions. So it's not just Huntington's where people have different responses to drugs. And, you know, there are a multitude of reasons why that may be.
Right.
But sometimes we need to, doctors need to try more than one thing if the first one doesn't. The first one fails. Usually things fail because of side effects.
Mm-hmm.
More often, I think, than lack of benefit.
Right. Those side effects could be pretty scary, of, you know, or really affect, like you were saying, the quality of life. And so I think that, you know, one, I want to kind of get into what are the challenges of getting Austedo. Because I keep hearing about there's challenges out there getting the drug.
Well, we're not, our community, some of our community is aware of it, and but many are not. If you, getting up to speed on prescribing it for doctors is, I mean, doctors getting up to speed for prescribing it to their patients takes a while. There's a mm-hmm. knowledge and education component. They don't know the drug is out there. You know, it's not like a new drug for diabetes or hypertension where we hear or where we hear about that. Doctors hear about that earlier than people are going to hear about this drug. If you're mm-hmm. not a movement disorder neurologist, you may not hear about this drug for quite a while. If you are a family with Huntington's, you may not hear about it unless you, you know, have received some education, or you are, you know, you've seen your doctor at the center. You may not know about it, so you don't ask your doctor about it, and your doctor may not know about it because it's a new drug. He's never heard of it before, he or she. So they're all...
Sure.
There's a lack of awareness. It's a new drug, and that's not so different than other new drugs. It takes a while for it to trickle down, the knowledge or the education to trickle down to where it's most useful. You know, many of our HD families are taken care of by generalists, and those are general neurologists and general medical physicians like me. We don't hear about it unless we go to meetings. You know, if I were, mm-hmm. you know, 20 years ago when I wasn't doing primarily HD, I wouldn't have heard about this. And if a Huntington's individual came in to me, I wouldn't have a clue what to do because I wouldn't have heard about it in any of my general education events. It's going to take a while for that to trickle down, and it may require that families learn about it first and then help their doctor learn about it. Most doctors mm-hmm. want to mm-hmm. help individuals with Huntington's. They just don't know how because they mm-hmm. just haven't been taught. So it becomes, unfortunately, part of a patient and family responsibility to be to empower themselves to bring some information to their local doc if you don't get mm-hmm. your care at a center. And I would encourage that. I think we have to be, we in HD families have to advocate for ourselves in many mm-hmm. instances and strongly encourage that. I think
yeah.
there's the,
well,
also, go ahead.
Go ahead, Sylvan, sorry. I was going to talk about more. I was going to talk actually about like the social media and this. I think if a story goes out And it almost scares people. So I think that I have seen a couple stories, and I've heard through Help for HD of a couple stories where people are worried about cost. And because they've heard of stories on different platforms like social media platforms or even emails or whatever that may be, they've heard these stories and now they're scared to even try because
right.
they don't want to be stuck with in the donut hole, or they don't want to be stuck with a large copayment. And the one thing I think is, I think I like communication a lot, but I think a lot of the times communication will make someone so they just don't try when they don't realize there are so many resources out there that can help with, you know, getting
right.
prescriptions for your loved ones and stuff.
Yeah, it is an expensive drug, but it's mm-hmm. less expensive than tetrabenazine. It is less expensive. The list price for Austedo is less expensive than the old tetrabenazine, both generic and brand name. Unless they come out, you know, maybe some company will come out with a generic that's less expensive, but, you know, I'm not aware that's happened yet. Mm-hmm. It's expensive. Any drug that comes out, new drug that comes out for Huntington's is going to be expensive. It's going to cost your insurer a lot, and you may have to, and you and your doctor may have to fight a little bit for it or advocate a little bit for it. It's expensive. Yes, we have a rare disease. Any new drug, not just for us, but for any rare disease, is going to be very expensive. There is a new oligonucleotide therapy for children and infants with a neurologic disease whose name is escaping me for the moment. My brain is not bringing up that word. But that the cost of that drug is, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands, $100,000 a year. We're not there with this one. Drugs for cancer are expensive. It's going to be expensive, but this one is less than our other FDA-approved drug. Insurers, at least in my experience, insurers have, it may take a pre-authorization request, but most insurers have agreed to give this or to supply this drug. Is there a larger copay for this drug than for other common drugs that are used? Yes, there will be. But there will be the company through Shared Solutions, and I have the that email address up, can help with large copays. There are various places that can help with, let's say you have I had a recent patient who had, you know, they didn't have very many expenses that year, so they had an initial financial outlay that was big, but they also got help with that. So you have to know to go to Shared Solutions and find out the number of different ways that you can be helped with a donut hole, that you can be helped with a large copay, that you can be helped also with if you have an initial pay that you have to do. You know, you have to pay out so much money before you before your insurance will kick in. There are things out there that will help cover it, but you're going to have to go and ask for it or communicate with Shared Solutions, and they'll try to help you.
Yeah, I think they definitely are a good place to start. They're a good advocate. I've dealt with Shared Solutions when I got Mike on Austedo, my husband, and they are a big help over there.
Right, I have found them to be, you know, it may not be total help, but it will take a large part of it, that financial burden off the family. The plight of the other thing to know is that they supply Teva supplies the drug free until the beginning of next year. So if one prescribes it and there is then a refusal letter for the insurer to cover it, the company, Shared Solutions, will provide the drug, or Teva through Shared Solutions will provide the drug, and giving time for the doctor to appeal the refusal to cover it, which requires extra work from the doctor, and there are some doctors who may not be willing to do that. And what I have actually up on, also up on my website, is you can always take a little letter in with you if you have been refused. And I give some information in there somewhere about what to include, what the doctor might include. So helping the doctor mm-hmm. with that, I think, would be helpful too.
Sure.
And there was something else in my brain that was going to come out there, but it didn't.
I also think that the lack of awareness that the patient, you know, gives, you know, obviously the HD experts like you and the people who've, you knows HD so well, we're not worried about them. But like you were saying, the ones that go to like a general practice, if they look at their provider and or their healthcare provider and say, or doctor and say, chorea doesn't bother me. You know, I think that a doctor is going to say, okay, well, if it doesn't bother you, fine. And I think this has been a big topic amongst all of us for many years, is how much a caregiver needs to play in this, because chorea impacts a family as a whole. And it's not just the patient. Of course it affects the patient. We know that as caregivers watching them, but they may not know it affects them. And it also affects our children. It affects us as caregivers, our extended family, our animals even. You know, chorea is, you know, I've seen my husband step on my dog. You know, chorea affects the family as a whole. So I think that's also a big barrier, is that if you go into someone who isn't an HD expert like Dr. Goodman, you may just have a doctor say, okay, it doesn't bother you, we'll see you later.
Yeah, I think that there is, it has been kind of taught to us that that chorea is relatively unimportant compared with the behavioral changes of Huntington's. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all symptoms are important. And mm-hmm. HDSA did a survey that actually surprised me a little bit when those results came out. It's really the motor symptoms that score up there very high, too, on impact or negative impact that symptom has. And movement, chorea, and balance were the most impactful symptom for families, and a very high impact for individuals with HD2. I think the real measure of whether chorea bothers or is problematic for an individual with HD is how they feel after it's been treated.
Mm-hmm.
Individuals with Huntington's, you know, these movements come on very gradually, and they're strong people. They adapt. We adapt. We go mm-hmm. along with it and do the best we can with what we have. And as we slowly learn to do that, we will say, oh, it doesn't bother us very much, even though I'm spilling things, I feel stigmatized when I go out, it's not bothering me very much. So unless you ask, the doctor asks the right questions, does it limit your social, you know, you're going out, your social socializing? Does it embarrass your children? These things are important, very important. I remember the impact that it had on my husband earlier in the disease, and we had gone to a movie, and his foot was jerking and hitting the chair in front of him in the theater, mm-hmm. and the guy there turns around and says, "Hey, stop that! You know, we're irritated." And so my husband, you know, instead of saying, you know, we just didn't know quite what to do. I wasn't quite as aggressive about things as I am now, but wasn't then. And it was the last movie we went to together, last movie he went to. Now, is that impactful? Sure it is.
Yeah.
And did the doctor ask me that question? And would we think of saying, well, does Korea bother you? Well, yeah, it did. It does. So we just don't ask quite the right questions.
Right.
Both the doctor and the patient may believe that there is that it isn't an important symptom. So I think the real measure is if it can be treated, seeing the benefit after, and then we know how impactful it was. And I think my patients
right.
who have benefited from this drug would very much share that opinion. They can swallow better.
Right.
They can be understood more. They can work with smaller, they can use their iPhone much more easily. Now, those are little things,
mm-hmm.
right? Well, they're big things if
right.
you can't do them.
Yep. If you can't
or get
do
very
them.
Frustrated
yep.
doing them. Yeah. So those are big things.
Yep.
So you have to advocate for your person and say, I want to try this drug, unless there's a good reason why not to.
Right.
So I have used this drug on both individuals with milder chorea and those with more severe. I've used it on both successfully, both ranges.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think anytime we get a new drug, it's exciting, and so it's definitely going to be we're going to look to you guys prescribing it and watching it in the future on all these good, you know, the stories coming out of it, good and bad. We always have to remember this is a drug, and I'm sure there's going to be really great stories, and we may have some others, you know, we may have some stories like you said that it doesn't work. So it's worth trying.
It's very disappointing to think that maybe there's something here that will help and then it doesn't. That is very disappointing. And one needs to go into it when one gets the prescription, realizing that may happen. It happened in the clinical trial. It may happen for two of my individuals. You know, I wished it would have helped, but it didn't. One of the things that I think the article I like that I like the best is really Ralph Ryleman's. He's the movement guru, one of my favorite docs, HD specialists, who he says this drug isn't a revolution. You know, it's not an oligonucleotide cure or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't slow down the disease progression. But it's a welcome evolution. So we have a drug now that is better than what we had before for treating chorea.
Right.
It's just chorea. It's not the other symptoms. But all symptoms are important, particularly
right.
if you have a drug that's not going to harm you.
Right.
Or has low potential
Absolutely.
For harming you. You know, there's never a drug out there that won't harm you if you, you know, are under certain circumstances. Aspirin does. Tylenol
sure.
does. Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
Now,
well,
I have to say that, you know, I have to say as a disclaimer that I have given presentations on this drug and have been paid by Teva to do so. I've never done that before because you just kind of grow up as a doctor having distrust of drug companies and their representatives who come in and in the past, at least, FDA prevents that now, but, you know, gave doctors gifts and, you know, did things for them to prescribe their new drug. And so you even though it wasn't any better than one that was less expensive. So you sort of lost trust in individuals. But for this one, I think our families are not going to hear about it, and many doctors will not hear about it, unless doctors who are experienced in it share their experiences, share their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I totally unbiased? You know, am I at risk for being biased and have a conflict of interest because I've received money from the drug company? Yeah, I have to accept that there may be some of that in there, because it's hard to escape it. But one can do the best you can. But the upside is that you got to get the information out there, because nobody else will, or it'll be much harder to get it out unless advocates like you and me help get it out.
Yep. Exactly.
Are there questions out there?
No, we don't. We haven't had any questions come in. We have a lot of people in the room, but there hasn't been any questions. But I do want to tell people, definitely go read this article, because especially if you're, it's a really good article, and she actually talks about more than she's talked about on the show. And the article can be found at www.hddrugworks.org. And I'm going to give a plug for this website. It is a really good website. There's a lot of good articles, and they're archived. So you're actually able to go look up other articles within HD Drug Works, and it is a great resource for families out there for sure. Do you have any final thoughts, LaVon?
I am hopeful that there will be, and I think that, and I know that there are some plans for HSG to develop new guidelines for the treatment of chorea. That is something that is in its infancy, but it's going to happen. And that's going to be important for getting the drug covered more easily by third-party payers, because they ask, well, where's the guideline that this is better? And HSG, I think, is stepping up to the plate to help that get out there in a form of a guideline, so then that can be utilized to bring this drug to more people.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
You know, guidelines take a while to be picked up on, but you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, sure, of course. All right. Well, so if anyone wants to read the article, it's up on the show page, and then Shared Solutions. You know, they're a great resource, but before anything else, talk to your doctor. That's number one step, is go to your doctor and talk to them about chorea and talk to them about Austedo if you would like to try it. And I think we can wrap up the show for now. I'm going to give you guys a couple of updates. I want to, first of all, say next week's show, we're doing Caregiver Network. He lives in Miami, the person we were going to interview from Caregiver Network. So chances are the show will be canceled next week because of the hurricane that's heading their way. So just kind of to keep that in mind. Speaking of hurricanes, we are heading to Houston on September 30th for all the HD families that are out
there.
I know. Yes. For all the HD families out there. I know. We're going to definitely reevaluate dates next year, but it is a free education day for families. We'll have a free breakfast, a free lunch. We're going to have a lot of resources there if you're able to get, and we would love to have you there with us for the day. We also started a disaster fund for Hurricane Harvey. For more information about that, you can always go to our website, www.helpforhd.org. On October 14th, we're having Strikeout HD, and then once again, we're heading to Tampa on October 21st, and we hope that the hurricane doesn't hit that area too hard, but who knows what the weather we're having this year. It's been quite crazy year. So I think that's it for now. Also, we gave out scholarships for symposium, but I found out we just gave the last one away. So that is exciting. We can't wait to see people in Iowa. And so I guess, in Tampa. So I guess that I will wrap up the show now. And once again, we'll send out an email alert and we'll put it across Facebook and Twitter and all of our platforms if the show is not going live next week due to the weather. So until then, you guys can always look us up on www.helpforhd.org. Follow us on Facebook and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram.
Until next week or possibly the week after, everyone have a nice night.